podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Brighton Rock Podcast, the podcast about the beautiful club within the beautiful game, with me, Russell Guyver, and joining me on a duo for tonight, it is Mr. Andy Bass. Welcome back to the pod, sir. How are you?
Not too bad. Bit of a sore throat at the moment, a little bit of a spring cold, but apart from that, I'm very well. Thank you very much.
Yeah, a lot of it going around. I've survived it so far. It's all you getting out and about, going all over the place. That'll be what it is with your epic coach journeys to Burnley, for example.
Yes.
Which you're just telling me about. In this episode, of course, we will discuss the Burnley game, which you were attending. A little bit about the final weeks of the season. There's a real exciting climax going on across the various divisions. Few teams have confirmed promotion and relegation in the last week or two as well. Maybe talk about that. And talk about the latest situation with De Zerbi and any other Albion business. So that's all coming up in this episode. Burnley, you went on the coach, the supporters club, didn't you? Long day out, Andy. How was it? Because you said you quite enjoyed the game, didn't you? Apart from the outcome.
Yeah, it's very weird because... I mean, you know, technically it wasn't a great game, but I thought it was a very open game. There were chances at both ends. Both teams had much better opportunities to score than the actual goals themselves, which were both gifts, gifts from the opposition. But actually, I thought it was all right. I think basically people, because we're expected to beat teams like Burnley, I think there's a little bit of that in people's negative reaction to it. And also the fact that, you know, that the season, in fairness, doesn't look like it's not playing out how we all would have hoped. You know, that's pretty obvious. It's fizzling out a little bit. And I think everyone's feeling a bit tired. I think the players are tired. The management's tired. The fans are all a bit tired as well. We're kind of like hoping that the season could just finish now and we can look forward to next season. But I actually thought it was quite a fun game. Burnley were actually pretty good. They started so strongly then. They were absolutely slicing us apart. It was a very disappointing start from the Albion. I just thought, you know, our defence was just getting ripped open, and quite frankly, Burnley had the opportunity to score one or two actually very good goals as opposed to the rubbish one they did get. Pardon me. And then once we kind of got away with not letting one in the first sort of 20 minutes, we decided that we were going to have a go as well. And we started to move the ball forward and start to look a bit more confident. And we had opportunities as well. I thought Pedro probably could have done better with a headed chance that he had. Modder very unlucky with his free kick. So it was nice to see, you know, a new free kick taker, and
yeah,
B, see it actually go on target and force a decent save from Mrčić. I actually thought there was quite a lot to enjoy. I mean, I think people have a lot of preconceptions about Burnley, both as a place and a team. And I know I thought they challenged pretty much all of them at the weekend. I did think they played well. Although that said, when we got back into it, I thought we did look like a stronger team, and there was a chance that we were going to make them pay. But yeah, it was, you know, I thought it was a bright opening to the game, and yeah, I don't know, I thought it was all right.
Yeah, I mean, we are, as you said, it's sort of petering out. We've had to continue to suffer with injuries. There was more at the moment. I think we, according to De Zerbi, we had 9 going up into this game, including Lamptey, who had to drop out of the team, and we had Estupiñán who did start this game, ended up coming off injured. We're not sure how serious that is at the moment, but if if any of the others are not back and he's still out, obviously that goes into double figures on injuries, even at this late stage. We had no respite. But the team, I mean, for this one, it started with Verbruggen in goal. Now, that was significant for the fact it was the fifth successive league start, which breaks the cycle. Up until now, both goalkeepers had had four games in a row at various points during the season. This is the first time one goalie's had five, and there's been a big debate about the goalkeeper. Should it be one? We're very unique in rotating between the two over short patches. But it looks as if, at least at the moment, unless there's an injury or an illness going on behind the scenes, it looks like Verbruggen's getting the favour at the moment on a more significant basis. And although he was partly responsible for the goal, I think it's, we'll talk about that in a minute. But the overall, you know, I think getting a run of games and making those mistakes, especially in a season where we're unlikely now to get into Europe, I think it's kind of like a good time to experiment slightly, especially if De Zerbi does stay next season and the project continues with him. It's quite a good time to maybe just give Bart that longer run in the team. But anyway, he was in goal. Veltman came in for Lamptey. We had Van Hecker, Dunk, centre-backs, Estupiñan, as I said, on the left. Grosch and Belaba, central, with Modda further forwards in a sort of like a 10 role, I guess, 8 or 10. Adingra and Joao in the wider areas. Welbeck again starting. So Joao was back in the team. And there was a few subs as well there as well. Adingra, Modda and Welbeck all came off on 77 minutes for Lallana, Fati and Buonanotte. And also Omani made his debut in the 89th minute, coming on for João Pedro. We'll talk about him in a moment as well. But yeah, that goal, I mean, the first goal, I think, you know, we put ourselves under a bit of pressure. And I think it was a bit of a weird one, wasn't it? Because Bart came out and went with his feet. And it looked to me as if he could and should have gone in just with his arms. But I think I can see what's probably happened there. He was probably not quite sure how quick the player was going to get to the ball. So there might have been an air of hesitation about it. But there was also an air of the momentum he might take to get to the ball in time. He may not have been sure he would have been able to stay in his area once he was handling the ball. But he decided to slide in with his feet and it just ricocheted off Brownhill straight into the goal. A gamble on their part that paid off for our side of it. Unfortunate a little bit because it could have gone anywhere, but it was a weird one, wasn't it? What did you make of that?
It was just a comedy of errors, really. I mean, it kind of initially came from a Verbruggen clearance upfield,
yeah.
Which then there were like two Burnley passes, which then put the ball into the space where Belaba, you know, just, I mean, we were right behind it, obviously at the other end, but we were right behind it. But you could see as soon as he barely got a touch on the ball and in the pass back that it was going to be a goal.
Yeah.
I think the other factor is because it would have been a back pass, so would have been handball if Verbruggen had gathered the ball.
Yeah, there's that as well, isn't there?
And he was very unfortunate. I mean, I could see what he was trying to do. I think Verbruggen would probably might do something different, might do that a bit differently. But really, the error was Belaba's. I mean, he was dropped in it. The forward was going to be the favourite to win that particular skirmish. But for it to like rebound off his shin was just like just fully in keeping with the comedy of the moment. When Burnley had carved out so many other good chances from good moves, it was basically just like one pass, one hoop, flick over the head and just a hit and hope ball over a head, and it just seemed to land in the right place. And
yeah,
I really felt for Belaba because I thought Belaba has had an excellent game up to that point, and he was absolutely distraught, and Van Hecker went to pick him up straight away and was like reassuring him and just like being a very good teammate. And I did kind of wonder whether, you know, was Belaba going to sort of like just lose his head through the disappointment of, you know, he felt that he let the team down. And I did wonder whether like, was De Zerbi going to bring him off? And I have to say, I thought it was probably a very good thing that De Zerbi didn't take him off, because it you make a mistake, you get taken off. It kind of like, you know, that's a real kick in the proverbials, isn't it?
Yeah.
But also he did get his head back together and he did continue to contribute from that point forward, which I think showed some really good mental maturity from Belaba, who is definitely benefiting from this run in the side now, and hopefully he can play all the way out, and especially given the opponents that we've got coming
Yeah.
up, this is going to be like the real cauldron that he can really see how he can step his game up against, you know, some pretty good opponents, particularly in that, to be honest, every the way that Bournemouth and Newcastle are playing at the moment, you know, all these games that we've got coming up are difficult matches against teams playing very well at the moment, except for maybe Man United, who aren't getting beaten but somehow managing to get draws from what should be quite comprehensive defeats. But the other teams are all in excellent form. As tight, and you know, I hate to say Chelsea's one of those teams, but so Belaba is going to get a good chance to really get up to speed on you know, on playing at that level, which is all going to be good for him next season, I think. And yeah, it was just a really unfortunate goal. I didn't think we didn't. I would have been disappointed if we'd have lost. If we'd have lost, I think my demeanour might have been somewhat different if we'd have lost 1-0 to that goal. But luckily,
Just 5 minutes later, five minutes.
out of sympathy for my mental well-being, Sander Berg thought he would just tap it back into the net whilst Berchis wasn't looking at the ball.
Yeah, that's got
It,
to be on the goalie, that one, hasn't it? Because although they say they never pass it back between the posts, so if there is a mistake, it still doesn't go in. But to be honest with you, he didn't overhit it at all or anything, did
no.
he? It was just purely the goalkeeper just took his eye off the ball. It didn't even look as if he had, but somehow he must have done. He just got it wrong. It was just under and slightly to the right of where he thought it was, and I didn't think it would have enough oomph to get over the line, but clearly it did. Much to his quick reactions, efforts to the contrary, he couldn't keep it out. It goes into the classic comedy gaffes by goalies right up there, doesn't it? It's a horrendous error.
It was absolutely ridiculous. And for me, it felt like it restored some order to the game. I thought, yeah, okay, we're now back level, and I think that's kind of where this game should be. I don't think either side had done enough to win. They both, you know, done enough to like score other goals, but I thought this sort of evened itself out a bit. But yeah,
Yeah, Muric, the goalkeeper, by the way, it's not Trafford. He's been ill at the moment, so he was only on the bench. So Muric is the guilty party on that one.
yeah, it's a shame for him because he made an error last week,
Yes. Yeah.
where he was responsible for conceding an equaliser, and like, you know, Burnley could have done with those extra 4 points; they'd be a much happier team if they kept hold of them. So maybe Burnley could still get out of it. They've got quite a big gap, but
Yeah.
I don't think they're terrible. I just think they just don't take their chances. Pardon me.
Yeah, I think that's been the problem. Vincent Kompany's definitely changed the philosophy at Burnley, obviously. As we know from last season, they played their way out of it in style, deservedly promoted automatically. I think they won the title, didn't they, as well? But he was on the touchline. He wasn't on the touchline because he had a ban. So Craig Bellamy was in the dugout. So we didn't really hear from Vincent Kompany, but he has had a lot to moan about this season. There's been a lot of decisions and bits of bad luck as well, which he's lamented. I think the problem is when you play that style of football, it tends not to work, does it, in the Prem? You need to have a period of finding a way to just survive for a season or two, as we did, and as other clubs that have been successful have managed to do, and then you move on from there, I suppose. I mean, I guess Brentford were kind of slightly more comfortable in their first couple of years, weren't they? And it's ironically this season they've struggled more, although that's mainly due to injuries. But yeah, I mean, Burnley, I don't think will survive, but they're still in the hunt. It's a gap, but it's a surmountable one, I think. I am inclined to think that the bottom three at the moment will be the bottom three at the end of the season. I think Palace and Brentford have secured themselves now. I can't see them getting involved. It's
No.
only really if Everton and Forest implode. We're recording this on Tuesday. The Monday match was Everton, imploding, 6-0 thrashing at the hands of Chelsea, for whom Cole Palmer scored 4 goals, including a perfect hat trick before the penalty that he scored later in the game. We'll talk about what happened with that in a minute as well. But it was a perfect hat trick. Apparently, it's the fastest perfect hat trick, i.e., left foot, right foot, and header, in Premier League history. 29 minutes it took. And it's also, I think, the first time a player scored, the first time Chelsea players scored 4 goals in a game in some, there's some record to do with that as well. And it's also, he scored, I think, in a certain number of games in a row. Is it 6 home games in a row he scored in, I think? Him and
Yeah.
Isak are on similar records at the moment. Isak at Newcastle. So yeah, Everton are really, that is not a good time to start having a match like that, I've got to say. But I do think they'll probably survive by default. But Luton battling away and teams like that, you know, it's still, Forest have got a bit of fight in them as well, haven't they? They've certainly got a bit about them. So Everton could still drop, having had, of course, their 2 sets of points deductions. But anyway, yeah, to go back to the just to summarise on the Burnley Brighton game though, I think your point about you were saying about Belabor, and it kind of ties in with what I said about Verbruggen, and it's probably true of Modder as well, actually, who's had some games in a row now, but he's still trying to feel his way back in. I think it's a good time for a few of our players like that to feel their way into the team and learn a bit more about the De Zerbi style, particularly if he stays for next year. De Zerbi, that is. We've got, obviously, Omani made his debut off the bench as a late sub. Maybe, you know, give him another couple of run-outs, one or two of the
I
young
would like to see Omani get some more game time. I think with Ferguson out injured, I don't see why he can't be the resident, third forward on the bench if we're going to play Welbeck and
Yeah, might as well.
Pedro and have him. I have to say, when he came on, he's a unit.
Yeah, I didn't realize. I've
He
not
looks.
really seen him. So
He's my he's he,
he's a
he
big guy,
not a
isn't he?
small boy. I mean that he looks like a centre forward. And he nearly I think he nearly scored but like with his first touch. I mean it was just like I saw a little flash of inspiration from him. I would definitely like to see him get some minutes in the remainder of the season. Because he does look a prospect. He's done so well for the under 21s, been very prolific there and has impressed everyone that's watched him. And, he's not going to get any better watching from the sidelines, is he? Just get him on there, give him a chance. He looks big and physical. I thought that was another positive from the game that we got to see him play. Modder's continued return from injury again, I thought went quite well. I thought he impressed as well. I mean, I don't think we played badly at all. And I don't think Burnley did. I just think, the finishing from both sides was lacking. But the in between the boxes play, I thought was quite good, and I don't think that game was anywhere near as bad as people made it out. I think
Yeah, I think.
a couple more goals, I think, would have been talking about it in a different way.
Yeah, two other points for me from watching the highlight. I watched the extended highlights on Sky, or two or three things actually. One you've already alluded to, which is the Modder free kick. He got it on target, a curled shot near post, tip wide. You'd expect the goalkeeper to make the save, but it was still a decent effort. I don't know, that's a one-off example, but I don't know if he's got the ability to become a significant threat from free kicks on an ongoing basis. But that first sign of it from that, I don't remember him taking any free kicks for us before. Maybe he has, but it'd be good to see if he can play around with that as well, because we don't really have a threat now from free kicks. I don't think the Lewis Dunk experiment has not worked for me. Alexis McAllister was a threat, but obviously he's gone. Pascal Grosch feels as if he should be somebody that would be good from free kicks, but he's either never taken them enough, or he's not particularly done well with them. He put the in swingers, you know, the indirect ones are fine, but in terms of the ones where you can shoot at goal, yeah, give Jakob a go. Let's see how he goes. That's one point. Second one was there was a good little build-up play coming down the left wing in the during the match. I think it was in the first half, where there's a good little 1-2 that put Danny Welbeck in on the inside left channel, and that was a bit disappointing. It sort of petered out, didn't it? It felt as if he could have either chipped it or cut it back across slightly more. But it was a bit of an ineffectual sort of half-fast kind of prod forwards, which was easy to snuff out. Could have done better with that, maybe. And the other bit was somebody said that Wenonate could have had a goal right near the end, but I didn't see that on the highlights unless I somehow missed it and went blank for a minute. I'm not sure what they were talking about there or how good a chance that was. Presumably it wasn't that good a chance, or they would have showed it on the highlights. But, you know, it's Wenonate, of course, is another one who the Zerbi likes, probably doesn't think is the finished product, but has mentioned a few times as a good, talented and flexible player. I mean, he's had his moments, hasn't he, this season? And it'd be good to see what else he can do with the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think Faku's come on really well this season. And I think he's changed as a player. I think he's much more physical. He's really physical now. He's a real tiger in that midfielder. He's in that midfield. He's the one sticking his boot in. He wants to get forward. He's very aggressive. And he scored some spectacular goals as well. He's got a good shot. So I think he's developing really well this season, which has been a positive.
Yep.
Going back to your point about like the late chances, we had lots of opportunities where we just seemed to be indecisive with the ball in the box. There was one where Fatty put someone in, but Fatty was offside when he received the ball. But there was another one, I think, where Lallana received the ball, and he just like one turn too many, he ended up just like kicking it against the defender that was in front of him.
Haven't we done that enough times this season?
Pedro as well. He got into the box and was just not decisive enough. So inside the box, there's a lack of decisiveness. There's another time where Fatty made a great run. So this is all, you know, all the late subs, like all in the last like 10 minutes. Fatty, great run. And I think Pedro was screaming for the ball and Fatty just held on to it too long. And then the chance had gone. It was very frustrating to watch. So it was, you know, but the opportunities were there. We just lacked the awareness to take them. I think they'll be very frustrated. I think, well, you know, we could have done better with a lot of those chances. So the decision making was poor in the final thirds. But yeah, between the boxes, I thought we were great. And I thought, and the same for Burnley. But like in the boxes, neither side really did a great job. But I suppose, you know, it's goals that count, and that's what people see. But there was enough good football on there to enjoy. I certainly didn't feel like I'd wasted my day. I mean, it was, you know, good day out, good company. Thought the Albion fans were excellent, really good noise from the Albion fans all afternoon. Not so much from Burnley fans, except for when they scored and when Jay Rodriguez came on, and that seems to be when they start to sing. You know, read into that what you will, but
They're in the middle of their "Ale Ale Ale" chant when they made the mistake for the goal, weren't they? Which gave me a bit of a wry smile. I thought that was right.
Yeah, there was. It was. I mean, it was. I mean, obviously, comedy goal, but great comic timing as well. I mean, it was just like just as Turf Moor was rocking.
Yeah.
But you know, I've had worse Saturdays. I've got to say, it was a long day. Started the day half six at home station, and got home about 10 past midnight.
Not too bad. The other thing, of course, is that in terms of the point, it's a valuable point. We could have lost the game. We didn't. We got the point. And that makes a difference because there's a lot of teams closing in on us because we, in results terms, we've been quite poor. We have been catchable. And gradually, unfortunately, Chelsea have caught us and overtaken us for now. And there, I think it's 4 points clear now. And they've got a better goal difference now.
Yeah.
The thrashing they administered last night. But you've got the Wolves and the Bournemouths closing in. And actually, Bournemouth, who somehow conspired not to beat Man United in similar fashion to the way Brentford failed and Liverpool failed. I don't know how many times a team can take a battering and still come away with a draw. It's absolutely bizarre, Man United. But anyway, they did, in a way, help us with that result, because Bournemouth would have been right up there, wouldn't they? I think they were on 42. They would have been on 44, of course, still goal difference behind us. But it's getting close. I mean, we're on 44 points. Wolves have 43. Fulham are up to 42 after their win at West Ham. Bournemouth, 42. And then there's an enormous gap to Palace on 33. So satisfyingly, we're still 11 ahead of them, plus a huge goal difference. But the other teams, you know, threatening our position in the top half of the table, which we've been in all season. Yeah. We wouldn't want to lose it just at the end, would we? And with Man City next up, after a week of not playing, weekend of not playing, it's a bit of a stressful, little bit of a stressful scenario, isn't it, really? Because we would like to keep in that top half. It's psychological, and I think it's just a benchmark. It's a milestone season on season, I think, to finish top half. We can accept we're not going to be as high as we were last year, because we had a lot of challenges. We had extra fixtures. We had a huge injury crisis, and we've had other difficulties, you know, trying to really to replace Casado from last season, which was not so easy. And McAllister, actually, I think it's been understated how much we missed him. Apart from the penalties, Joao's been all right with those. But apart from that, we've really missed Ali Mack, haven't we, yes, as well? So I think, you know, for us to finish top half would be my ambition now for this season. I'm happy with just that. And we go again next year, hopefully with De Zerbi. We'll talk about that in a minute. But just to wrap up the Burnley bit for part one, a couple of friends of the show who are in our pod squad WhatsApp group, David Townsend, he hasn't been on for quite a while, actually, but he said, he went to the game, but he said, I wouldn't have had much to say anyway, other than for God's sake, shoot. And then Robin, friend of the show as well, said that can essentially be the podcast review of the game in reply to that comment. I think that pretty much sums up. In terms of the chances, it's a bit frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. I mean, the last 10 minutes or so was, you know, they were just hanging on to the ball too long. They weren't being decisive enough.
Yeah.
That was frustrating, yeah. I agree with that.
Okay, well, we'll have a very quick break. And in part two, we'll talk about the rest of the football for the weekend and a little bit more about Roberto De Zerbi coming up after this short break. Okay, so to part two then, Andy. And it's getting towards the finale of the season. Lots of excitement across all the divisions. Just to quickly wrap up on the Premier League to start with, it's implosion time for the would-be challengers to Manchester City's crown and their attempts to win a record fourth Premier League era consecutive title, and also possibly the second treble in a row, which are very much on now. They were in third place at start of weekend, with Liverpool and Arsenal conspiring to lose games against opposition they probably shouldn't be losing at home to, certainly not in Liverpool's case. A 1-0 home defeat to Palace, Arsenal losing 2-0 to Villa, who seemed to be a bit of a bogey side, actually. As a result of that, City's earlier win in the weekend, thrashing of Luton, has left them 2 points clear now. They've all played 32, six to play. I predicted City were going to win it. It just felt like they're not likely to make slip-ups. They haven't done so far. Their rivals already have. Could you see it going any other way now? I can't. I could see Liverpool slipping up again, to be honest, given the fixtures they've got and the fact they just don't look that convincing. Arsenal maybe can stay in the race, but I can't see City slipping up, really. Can you?
Well, they've got to play us, Russ. So I think we will definitely be one of the games that Arsenal and Liverpool will be we will be a particular straw.
Well, we're not playing next weekend, so we'll be rested, and they've got to play Champions League.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, you know, City have got Champions League, they've got the Cup semi-final. So they've actually got quite a lot on at the moment. So, yeah, even though you would still make them big favourites to beat us. I mean, it's not over, but I just wonder whether like Liverpool have mentally gone and like Arsenal have just displayed their usual mental cracks again.
I think the first of those things is definitely the case. Arsenal have been stronger this year mentally than last year, but but ultimately they've cracked at least one time now at a key moment. It's difficult to say. You know, this supercomputer, as what was it, Shearer said, It can't be that super. It was predicting Arsenal last week. I
Yeah.
mean, ultimately, it's just reflecting the obvious odds difference week to week as the swings and turns of the title challenge carry on. It's sort of a bit ridiculous, isn't it? I suppose, actually, it's quite good. It just shows the reflection, the likelihood of what's going to happen. But it's just calling it a supercomputer sounds a bit ridiculous. But it's quite the Champions League position. We're assuming at the moment, the fourth place will be needed for Champions League because the coefficient has taken a pear shape, hasn't it? Thanks to Liverpool's implosion at home in midweek as well, to Atalanta, West Ham losing to Bayer Leverkusen. It's not looking good for English teams unless City go all the way and Villa do, which are the one of the two hopes. But assuming it's the top four, Villa have just edged ahead now because they, of course, won at Arsenal, which would be a big blow to Spurs. Along with Spurs' own big blow of getting absolutely hammered at some Saudi FC 4-0. So now Spurs are three behind and they're 3 goals behind in the race with one match in hand. So it's very, very close. Spurs quite capable of winning a game in hand 3-0, which would put it exactly level, for example. So obviously, fifth place could end up being enough, depending on that coefficient, but that's getting interesting. And there's a big gap to sixth, isn't there? So Newcastle are in the other Europa guaranteed place, and United are in what we're assuming is the conference place, just goal difference behind Newcastle. And West Ham are two behind that in the would-be extra place of eighth place, 48 points. Annoyingly, Chelsea are only 1 point off with games in hand now, which is pretty irritating.
Yeah.
Hopefully, we can help scupper that when we play them at the Amex. But that's quite interesting, isn't it? And also down at the bottom, I mean, Sheffield United, they've just spurned opportunities when they've been ahead, and that's going to cost them. Burnley, probably not quite enough, although we said that they could still do it. Luton have got fight. They're a point behind Forest. And both those teams have played a game more than Everton, who are 1 and 2 points ahead,
They
respectively.
both have to play Everton.
Yeah. And that's going to be a great end to the season, isn't it?
That's
That's
I'm
really
going to be tuning
entertaining.
into those games. I think, you know,
Yeah. Because, I mean, City could be done and dusted in a week or two. So this could be where it's at, the bottom of the table. As I said earlier, I don't think Brentford, Palace, Bournemouth, anyone like that will be involved now. So it's going to, yeah, Forest, Luton, and Everton. I think it's a foot race between those three. That's kind of fascinating, isn't it? How do you see it panning out, just briefly? Any thoughts on that?
I think you're right. I think sadly, I think Luton are not gonna do it. I think Forest have got enough, and Everton. I think Everton will finish 17th,
Yeah. Yeah, agreed.
and Luton will just miss out. I'd like to see Everton gone. They've just stunk out this division for a long time. I think Luton have been terrific.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of the area or or a lot of the fans, but you know, for the nicer fans out there, for the manager and for the players, it would be nice because they've been decent, haven't they?
They
Those
have
two.
been decent, and when they beat us 4-0, after the game, I think a lot of Albion fans were quite complimentary about Luton on the on Twitter. I had like on the coach home from that game, I had quite a nice little social media discourse with Luton fans who were quite surprised that we acknowledged we were beaten by the better side, which would have been churlish of us to have not said that because they were the better team.
Yeah.
I'd really like to see. I really like to see though. My history with Luton isn't particularly great. I don't particularly like the place or the fans, but I think that team works really well. I think their fans have got behind them this season, and so I'd like to think I'd like them to stay up and Everton go down. I think Everton are just going to stay up. They'll find a way to win one game at home, and that will probably do it for them.
Yeah, I mean they've already won. Well, I say won. The season's not over yet, but they've already won in one regard, Andy, and that is, of course, the most important stat of the lot. Difficult place to go, bingo. They are top with 10 quotes. 10 people have said it's a difficult place to go, which is not bad going, is it? The championship. Now, that is the division that nobody seems to want to win. I heard somebody say, I think it might have been Kieran and Dewsbury Hall, actually, I'm not quite sure. Someone was interviewed on one of the BBC Daily podcasts, asked about the running, and he said, oh, for neutrals, this is great, isn't it? He said it's not been as close a race between three teams at the top for ages. And it made me think, actually, the season we missed out just before we got promoted could be the last time, actually. So that would have been 2016. It really has been good. I mean, it's been Ipswich, Leicester and Leeds in one order or another all the way through. None of them seem to want to get over the line. Leicester were miles ahead at one point. They've been pulled back in. Leeds had a burst. Ipswich had a massively bad spell out of the blue, having had an incredibly good season for a team newly promoted. Absolutely fantastic. But they dropped away, came back strong. But now they've had another blip of a couple of weeks. No one seems to want to get over the line. It currently sits with, some pretty good points tallies. Ipswich are on 89 from 43. Leicester are on 88 from 42. And Leeds are on 87 from 43. So it's still very much in the top two's hands. And the interesting thing is, out of the blue, Southampton have got themselves now, due to these slip-ups, into a position where they could just eke in. Someone mentioned it to me a couple of weeks ago. I said, no way. But they've carried on picking up the points where the others haven't. They're now six behind Leeds. They're seven behind Leicester, who they do have a game in hand on. But more importantly, they've got two games in hand on Leeds and Ipswich, and they're 6 and 8 points behind, respectively. They're playing this midweek. If they keep winning, they could just about get in there. It could make it extra interesting. I don't think they'll make it, to be honest. But it makes it another excellent part of the equation. And the other bit is, if you look further down, you've then got West Brom, another nine behind on 72 in fifth place. Norwich, who have been quite solid recently, on 71. And then there's a number of teams stumbling below that. Hull have gone into form. Liam Rossignol, or Rossignol, as apparently it's supposed to be pronounced, according to the man himself. They're now top of the chasing pack on 65. So they're six behind Norwich, seven behind West Brom. And they've got a game in hand on both of those teams. They could still get in there. Coventry, probably now, it's a step too far because their goal difference behind Hull as well. Maybe they could do it as well, possibly. And then Middlesbrough are the same goal difference, but they played an extra match. So really, I mean, Hull and Cov, they could just about squeeze over the line. But to be honest with you, I think Norwich and West Brom will probably have enough. But at least there's something to play for there. What's your thoughts on the top half? How have you found it?
It's fascinating and very surprising, but you know, it is just a typical championship. You know, it's just a dog eat dog league, isn't it? It's just It's very difficult to get out of. And yeah, I think the Premier League will probably shake itself out over the next couple of weeks, but this is going down to the wire.
At the other end of the table as well. Because Rotherham are dead and buried. I mean, you look at the bottom three, all Yorkshire teams. That does make me smile somewhat. I don't know why. It's just the nasty element in me. Rotherham have been dead and buried for a long time. They've just not been good enough. But Wednesday, who seem to have improved, it feels like, they're going to get out of this. But they carry on staying second bottom all the way through. Their goal difference behind Huddersfield, who are a point behind Birmingham, who suddenly plucked out a massive win at the weekend against Cobh. And Stoke are a couple of points ahead, QPR. Plymouth beating Leicester, which I'm really glad Plymouth are likely now to stay up, because I think they deserve a run in the Championship after all their years in the wilderness. But it's a real battle down the bottom as well, isn't it? That could be entertaining too.
I mean, there's like 4 points covering 23rd through to 18th. So it's that's insane as well. Yeah, it's just the division that keeps on giving. I'm glad we're not in it.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
I don't think I could take the stress.
It's fantastically entertaining, fantastically competitive, and fantastically good not to be in. Yeah. You can get back and enjoy it, 100%. Oh, it's Shmoddix and Blackburn pulled off a result as Ipswich, weren't they, at the weekend? And that's another hell of a result, which has probably steered them clear as well. Yeah. And then in League One, you've got Portsmouth travelling in numbers, of course. They always mention Portsmouth support being really good, don't they? It's a little bit of a media default.
Yeah, we saw some on Saturday.
Oh, did it? Oh, yes, of course, yeah. Because they were up in Bolton, hoping to win promotion and the title. at one of their promotion rivals' grounds. Didn't quite work out that way. They can still do it this midweek. They've got a game actually tonight as we speak Tuesday. They are, as it currently stands, due to a draw with Bolton, still 9 points ahead of them. Both teams have three to play, so it's done and dusted in reality. Yeah. Derby did win in the meantime, I think, to squeeze up a bit, but they're still five behind. So Pompey could win the title tonight as well. Bolton will definitely be in the playoffs. So will Peterborough, I think. And then you've got Barnsley, who were look threatening for a while, but they look consigned to playoffs as long as they can get over the line. Oxford's been the big ones. 4 goals 1 week, 4 goals the next week, 5 goals a week after. They couldn't have timed their form better. They're now 3 points clear with a game in hand over the nearest rivals, Blackpool. My mate's a Lincoln fan, as they're another 2 points back, and they've had no midfield due to a load of it. They've had the same as us injuries all season, which is a bit of a shame. A good team that should probably be a bit higher. But I think Oxford are playing Lincoln this midweek. If they happen to get a result, Lincoln, away from home there, that might make it interesting. But I think Oxford probably deserve a place in the playoffs. That's interesting. At the bottom, Carlisle are down. Fleetwood are going to go down. So are Cheltenham. Port Vale, Darren Moore, Mr. Jumper Club here, there and everywhere. Never seems to be able to hold a job down. Seem to have made an impact for Vale, but not enough. Burton have just got enough together. 3 points clear with a better goal difference. Probably looking like Port Vale will go down. I don't know if you've got any more comments on that one, or should we talk about League Two very quickly?
Yeah, go on, let's have a look.
League Two. I mean, that I've loved it. I think it's a really good division, really entertaining, loads of goals. And we've had some intriguing scenarios, actually, with Stockport have gone wildly in and out of form. They're the biggest scorers in the division. They've scored 86 goals. Actually, Mansfield are on 85 and Wrexham are on 84. So the top three, which is not in that order, Wrexham a second, have all scored shitloads of goals.
Yeah.
It's great entertainment. But it's only this week there's been a swing. So Stockport came back into form. They got their win. They needed Mansfield and Milton Keynes Dons to slip up for Wrexham to get promoted as well. Wrexham did their bit with a 6-0 thrashing of Forest Green, which is pretty much done for Forest Green as well now this season at the other end of the table. But Mansfield and Milton Keynes Dons both slipped up, which allowed... no, actually, that's not right, was it? I can't remember now. Yeah, I think that's right. No, Mansfield won, that's right. But Milton Keynes and crew lost, so... So basically, it's kind of the top three is more or less settled now. All three of those clubs, I think, deserve it. Mansfield, for large parts of it, were considered the best team in the division, and they were the highest scorers until just a week or two ago. Stockport are good. Wrexham are brilliant. A lot of money behind them, of course, and they'll go well again. They could even get a third successive promotion. I wouldn't put it past them. That would be incredible. But Crewe... They've had a bad result, which still leaves a slight doubt over their survival. They're six clear of the chasing pack, but Doncaster, who are top of that leading pack, have won, I think it's 8 games in a row now. Wow. They were looking over their relegation shoulders just a few weeks ago, and out of the blue, they've come to within 1 point of the playoffs. They're just 1 point behind Crawley, who had a great run themselves and then have suddenly flopped 2 weeks in a row. Crawley have somehow stayed in the playoffs, but just 1 point ahead of Doncaster now, which is an incredible, incredible run. I'd love to see that, to be honest, Doncaster getting in. I love those kind of stories. It's a bit like, who was it went on the incredible run and got promoted a while ago? Can't remember who it was now. There was a similar thing in a similar division, and it's great to see. It's fantastic. Bottom of the table, Forest Green are done now. They're 5 adrift with 2 to play, and Colchester have got loads of games in hand as well. Yeah. So that's not happening. Sutton are a point behind. Again, they've only got 2 to play. Colchester have got 4 to play. So it looks like two of the traditional non-league teams who've made their way into the league are probably going to drop back. Colchester will have enough about them. And the Cowley brothers, who've steered Colchester to safety after a disastrous earlier period of the season and are staying in their mum's spare bedroom. They're staying in their old bedroom in bunk beds. Apparently. No. I love that. That's brilliant, isn't it?
Fantastic.
Love it. Convenient, you know. But it's been up and down the divisions. It's been absolutely sensationally entertaining, hasn't it? It's been really good. I've got to mention the National League as well. Adam Hinchelwood, of course, the York City manager, is, depending on results tonight, could be safe. He's steered them to safety. Apparently, it wasn't universally approved of as the appointment. Amazingly, I would have loved, as a York fan, to have had him come in based on his record. But he has done the business. They're 3 points clear at the moment with only one game left. The teams in the key area of the table, Ebbsfleet and Boreham Wood, have games in hand. But they're playing each other on the final day of the season. So if Ebbsfleet and Boreham Wood both lose their away games this midweek, they can't catch York. Well, they can't both catch York, which would mean York would be safe without playing, which would be nice for them. Oxford City are down, first time of asking. Dorking are down, second season. Kidderminster are down, first time of asking. And you, as a surrogate, sort of like a Barnet fan as well from your old school days, Andy, must be delighted to see your lovely friends Boreham Wood in one of those relegation places as one of those teams.
Yeah, most pleasing. So I'd like that bottom four to stay there. Stay the same if it could. So and obviously Barnet doing very well at the other end of the table.
Yeah, confirmed as a home team for the playoffs and avoiding the eliminator rounds, along with Bromley barring the shouting. Yeah.
So very exciting. Yeah, I mean Barnet have been through the ringer recently, so good to see them doing well this year.
And you and I both go to Worthing games when we can. Worthing have turned it around. They've suffered the loss of Adam Hinchelwood, the aforementioned, but they have got it back on track with their joint management team. It's essentially Aaron Racine as the official manager. They've got Dean Hammond on the management team there as well. They had a bit of a sticky start to the non-Hinch era, or the post-Hinch era, but they've got it back on track. They've had a fantastic run of wins, mainly against seriously good teams, including a win away at Yeovil, which is brilliant. They've got themselves into a position where they're guaranteed playoffs, and they are pretty much guaranteed a home match in the semi-finals now. That's the way it's going to work out. But they're playing Western Supermare on Saturday. They're at home, Worthing are. And Western Supermare have got to play two midweek games before they play that match. And they're in table obscurity. The chances of Worthing winning are very strong. We can't always guarantee it, of course. But if Worthing do win and Chelmsford slip up, Worthing would go into second place, which in itself would be a great achievement, highest ever position. But also it would mean that they would be guaranteed home advantage in any stages in which they're involved. So if they at the semi-final, they'll be at home. But they would also, if they got to the final, be at home against whoever gets through the other semi-final. Yeah. So a fantastic effort, really, to rally, come back into form. You must be delighted as a regular or semi-regular at Woodside Road.
Yeah, absolutely delighted, and especially after the trauma of Hinch leaving, and it was rocky the first couple of games after Hinch left. But the way that they've regrouped has been over the last month or so. It's just been outstanding, and they're really going for it. And I'm just looking at the table here. Worthing of scored 100 goals.
Yeah, top scorers, aren't they, in the division?
Top scorers by and only conceded 70. So a plus 30. They've conceded 70 goals and have a goal difference of plus 30.
Yeah, I mean, this
is some entertainment. Go and watch Worthing, basically, is the message that's being sent out there.
Yeah, I mean, even before Yeovil sort of trailed off a bit, they already had the top scoring stakes, Worthing, didn't they? So, great stuff overall, great stuff. I'm looking forward to seeing how they get on. There's a question mark about, would they be ready to go up? There's certain things in terms of the team and, with the disruption, whether they would hold their own. They would probably do an Oxford City or a Kidderminster, but they could do a Dorking and survive for a second season. They could even do better, who knows? But it'd be nice to try and see if we can find out. We'll see. Good luck to them, of course, up the
Rebels.
Absolutely, yeah. Final word before we wrap up. Is we mentioned De Zerbi. Of course, he's been linked with a number of jobs. It was thought he might be in for the Liverpool job once Xabi Alonso was saying he wasn't going there, and he also wasn't going to Bayern. It turns out that Amorim seems to be the top choice there, and De Zerbi isn't considered one of the main shortlist. Then, of course, it switched to Bayern Munich. He seemed to be considered by some as one of the favourites for that job. Turns out now, with Xabi Alonso turning that down to stay at Leverkusen. Congratulations to them, by the way, on winning the title at a canter in the end, at the weekend. But it turns out that Nagelsmann, a fairly recent occupant of the Bayern Munich bench, who is now the Germany manager, looks to be going back there. He seems to be the red-hot favourite. It's almost done and dusted, which suggests then that probably, unless anything comes up Italy-wise or Man United-wise, Roberto De Zerbi might still be playing, might still be in the hot seat for the Albion season, which would be brilliant news. It feels like unfinished business. And I think another good season would, subject to not having as many ridiculous injuries as this year, would be on the cards. What do you think?
Yeah, to be honest, I was always confident that Zerbi was going to stay. I didn't think he's good. I don't think he's good enough right now to do any of those jobs, because those jobs, you know, you go to those clubs, you have to win the league.
Yeah.
There's no margin for error. And, you know, as much as I love De Zerbi, I think he's fantastic and I'm delighted that he's probably going to stay. His defensive style doesn't suit those things. He's still got to figure some things out. He's been great, but he's not perfect. And I think, you know, just as much as the players are on the learning curve, especially the ones that we've brought to like be good in a year or so's time, I think the same applies with De Zerbi. I think he's, you know, it is unfinished business. If he jumps ship now, I don't think it's good for his career,
no,
or his reputation. I think if he gets Brighton to where we all were hoping he was going to get us, by the end of next season, if we can get into the top, you know, top six or seven again next year, that would be an incredible achievement.
Yeah. Even if he doesn't then lead us into that European campaign because he leaves at the end of next season, he would still have been the guy that got us into Europe twice. Obviously, we'd love to see him lead us into Europe again as well. But I think his legendary status is cemented. There's some idiots on Twitter that want to see a change. You know, there's always some idiot somewhere, isn't there? But let's face it, this is the golden period and the football's been fantastically entertaining. And even on the defensive side, there's one thing with that is that, you know, the Caicedo factor. Belabor's not the finished product. Caicedo left a year earlier than we originally planned for, and that has been a telling factor this season. If we had Caicedo in the team this season and he was leaving this summer, we'd be higher in the table. We might have gone further in both or either of those competitions, the FA Cup and the Europa. He was so key. It's so integral to the way De Zerbi plays. Because we play an exposed style, we can't get on the break. We really need a top-class defensive midfielder. I guess that's the one defence of could he do a job at a bigger club. You'd assume that they would have a world-class defensive midfielder in the team. Maybe that would help negate some of the shortfalls of the De Zerbi style, maybe. But you're right. I think it's a bit early for him. Why not cement your reputation another year or two with a club that's got a good profile now within the Premier League and abroad, and then go on from there? He's still relatively young. He's, what is he, in his 40s, I think, mid-40s, something like that. It's kind of what Xabi Alonso's doing. I absolutely love the fact that he's staying at Bayer Leverkusen. Why not? Because there's every chance they could win the title next season. He can outdo Nagelsmann. That's not Nagelsmann's Bayern Munich. 100% he can. Win another title, do well in the Champions League next year. You're absolutely twice as much a legend as you were already.
Yeah.
If you're Xabi Alonso, why not? Why not? He's still young as well. It's great. It's great to see. Well, on that note, I better wrap up. I'm on the Albion Roar as well this week. So listen out for me on that one. Tune in, folks. Andy, who's also, of course, a stalwart of the Albion Roar, thank you for joining me as always. It's been
my pleasure.
Hope you feel better soon. And on to the next one. I'm not going to the Man City game because I've already got a holiday booked. So I knew that was going to happen. Sod's law, isn't it? But my next one, I'm not sure what it'll be Brighton-wise, but I'm going to Margate to tick off ground number 189 or 190, I think it is, due to the Albion's lack of game this weekend. So we might do a little bit of a non-league special. That might be our next episode. Peter's going as well. But Andy, thank you for joining me. Until next time, stand or fall.
Up the Albion.
Sports Social Podcast Network.